All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 48 in this Ancient History program of History at Our House for the junior and senior high class. This is our last lecture of new material on Sparta today, so this will complete the segment on Athens and Sparta. Those are the two main city-states of ancient Greece, certainly the two most present-centrically important city-states of ancient Greece. And so that's a perfect place for us to stop here. And then next week when we pick things up, we'll get into the next chapter in which those two city-states are in a temporary alliance. And they in what's known as the Greco-Persian Wars, which is going to be a spectacular segment. And so this is just right here for us to conclude today. And so we'll finish. We'll name the Spartan government. We'll give it the best name that we can. And then we'll be ready. So what I'll do after this class is I will go and complete the test preparation sheets for you in the junior high level and post those to the class webpage. And they will join the other resources that you already have on that class webpage. If you go to the class webpage right now and you navigate to the January stuff, you will see week 18. You'll see here these belatedly posted week 16 notes and then the week 17 and 18 notes, which are there as well. So basically, this test that you're going to take now addresses this content, and it starts with week 13. Starts with week 13. So if you go back and, oh, am I right? Yeah, that's right, week 13. So you'll see week 12 was the end of test 2. So the content on this test will be week 13 through 18. And you also have on here right now a self-test if you care to, work through those during the class, right? The little questionnaires. And so I finally got one of those back up here for you to help guide you in listening to the material. And then the only other thing that I want to remind you of in terms of a resource that you have, if you want to keep kind of fresh in your mind as to where everything is that's going on, you may have lost track of this. And so it's back on lecture 35, the map of Greece. Okay, so here it is. And this contains the important locations, including Sparta, of course, and the context of some of what we're going to discuss at the end of today's class, the events of Sparta's rise as the dominant military power in Greece. So in order to know what we're talking about, we're going to talk about Argos and Corinth and places like that. So it's better to know where those places are than not. Make sure you have that map from lecture 35. I recommend printing it off and having a nice big copy of it, or at least having it on your screen. And you know what I can also do for you guys is I can just put that link right directly in the chat, and you can click on it right now and you can have it available to you. Okay, by the way, before we do the rest of Sparta, questions or comments or issues with regard to the homework. I have not had time to see who has and hasn't been able to submit their homework yet, but is that going all right, or do you have questions or issues with regard to the homework? I don't see anybody seizing the opportunity to discuss that, so I'm going to assume not. If you can't get it to me today, that's all right. I mean, better late than never. I want to discuss the right answers, so to speak, the causation linkages between the events tomorrow. So, as our review class, I want to review Athens much more than I want to review Sparta. And so tomorrow I want to discuss with you guys what the actual causation links are because you need those in order to really integrate the sequence of events that make up the rise of Athens. So your best bet for preparing for that is to do your homework, analyze what linkages you yourself identified, and that will prepare you to make the next leap, which is to improve your narrations in an editing round. Okay, well, let's get back to Sparta then. And where we left off was with the dreary reality of the professional life of the Spartan male, right? I mean, right from birth, you know, the more unpleasant reality was even a newborn infant was judged for its worthiness in participation in the Spartan state. The Spartan government decided whether a child would live or not. We're going to come back to that, because this total control over Spartan life, including the life of the, so, you know, what we might call the aristocracy, is the defining attribute of Spartan government, the essential attribute of it. So that is going to be the thing that helps us to find the right name for it. So from birth, you're under the control of the government. Your mom is going to raise you until you're 7, but then the government will come and take you and basically run your life for the rest of your life, if you're a male. And you will be trained, especially in physical education, and then later as you're maturing in the art of war, in physical combat. And your goal to graduate around the time from high school that we would be talking about would be to qualify to join the army, in effect, right? To join a platoon, which was a closely knit unit of warriors. And they would choose the graduates to join them, and then you would become a component of that fighting system, and you would live with your fellow warriors, and you would learn to become an integrated fighting unit. By the way, one of the other things that I didn't mention, which is pretty gruesome, but another, you know, part of the training of the youth, was when you were getting ready to graduate from and become a warrior, part of your training was to slaughter slaves. So you had to, you know, you're being trained here as a warrior. You have to, if you're really going to be good at war, right? You're going to have to be ready for what it's like to kill, right? And what it's like to take a life. And you can't be this traumatized little baby that's never done that before. So in order to get you ready to be a warrior, part of your training was that you would kill slaves. So you would get used to what it's like. You would learn the techniques and you would kill them. And so, of course, then you would get over that initial trauma, which, you know, any human being who's ever had to experience that as a soldier probably will lose an enormous amount of sleep for the rest of their life because they ended up doing that to another human being. But that's what it is, right? To be a soldier, to be a warrior, is to do that. And so if you're going to be a Spartan warrior, you better be ready. So you would slaughter slaves in training, and it was the real thing. And so you would qualify to join a platoon, then you would live your life in that platoon, and then your reward for all of that work that you did was more government service. You would be a lawmaker at age 30, and you might be able to become an E4, right? One of those crucial officials that monitored the kings. And probably if you were one of those exclusive family members, you might even know from the start that you might be destined to be a king, and you might be one of the, you might earn that. But there was no automatic kingship for anybody, in Sparta, even the kings had to justify their rule in terms of their service to the state. And so we're getting closer and closer to the essence here. If you keep on, I keep on returning to this point, that at every juncture, the government is overseeing your life. The government is in charge of your life. You do not own your own person. You do not have any rights. Your life is justified only in terms of service to the state. So you might already have some idea of what's the right term for that kind of government. Before we get to it, let's just mention, what was life like for girls? Right? So nowadays, kind of interesting, we are living in an increasingly egalitarian society, so we have this expectation that women will do or be able to do pretty much anything that men can or are allowed to do, including being a soldier. And in fact, some women have succeeded in earning some pretty impressive military credentials in the United States Armed Forces as well. I remember recently reading about two women that qualified to be Army Rangers, which is a very high level of military expertise and skill. It's basically what we call special forces. We have this expectation of a degree of equality in our modern society. In Sparta, it was definitely not the case. And so men were warriors. That's it. That's your one job. There's no other job description. There's no choices. That is life, period. And there's no expectation that it would ever change. The Spartans were absolutely committed to the premise that the walls and the city, remember from the poem, the walls and the city exist only because of the warrior. In other words, civilization is fully dependent on the ability to wage war. And so that's the one job description for males. What's the job description for females? Well, it's hard to give it quite the right connotation in modern times, because it's not quite the same thing. But if we were to use a modern term, we might say homemaker. Right? We might say that women were expected to care for the home. There were homes. Not everybody lived in bunkers or some kind of collective halls like you would say in an army. People did have homes, and children were raised in homes until age 7, right? And the women were there, and the slaves were there, and they were homesteads, right? They were lands with farms, and it was just the practical way of dividing up the family groups, and the women were in charge of all of that, including slaves, and running the affairs of the state. Anything external to the government, anything about private life, was basically in the hands of women. So they had their role as well in the society. Everything that didn't have to do with war, they were in charge of. How did they prepare for that? Or how did the government and society prepare them for that role? Well, it didn't take them and plunk them in a private school or anything. Of course, girls had to stay home with their moms and were raised for that. And when they had grown to adult age, well, they got married. Now, this leads to an interesting question. How did Spartan men and women choose their life partners? Anybody want to take an educated stab at this, based on everything that we've seen so far concerning the life of the men? How did Spartan men and women connect? How do they become husband and wife? Rosie?
The government probably knows.
That's a very good answer, right? You've already got the main theme here, is the government oversees everything. And to some extent, yes, but there was one step before that. And so there was a kind of pretty typical paternal structure in Spartan society. The dominant male of each family was the most important member of the family. So fathers chose husbands for their wives. So it's very much like the senior warriors choosing new warriors for their platoons. And alongside that, they're probably choosing husbands for their daughters. If a girl didn't have a father because he died in the wars or whatever, then, Rosie, your answer is exactly right. Then the government chose the husband. So, there's no such thing as the pursuit of happiness in Sparta. There's no such thing as the Spartan dream. There's no such thing as, you know, making the best life that you can and falling in love and having a family and all those wonderful things that make up the American dream, right? And having the best life possible. No, in Sparta, it was all about including the mother, including the daughters and their roles as homemakers, right? Their job is to produce new Spartan children and to raise them, to prepare them to either be warriors or new homemakers, and that's it. It just is a never-ending sameness. Right? This is life. And for Spartan, this was simply just an unquestioned reality. There's no issue here of being dissatisfied or unhappy with the whole arrangement, because anybody that wasn't satisfied with it just didn't make it, right? I mean, if you didn't make it into a platoon, if you were kind of a reject of some sort or another, or a rebel of any sort, then you were just ostracized and you left and you didn't live in that society anymore, and your chances of surviving at all were pretty slim. And so there just wasn't a choice. The culture was just entirely self-contained and entirely self-satisfied. It was a society of rulers, and we're going to get to the story just briefly here, what we know about the story of Sparta. And we're going to see it was a successful formula. Right? Societies don't usually question the values. People don't usually question the values in a society unless there's a trigger, unless there's a failure. And then people question, unless things go badly. Then people question, well, if these are our values and they lead to this failure, then maybe we need to change our values. But as long as you're successful in however you define success, right, then the values just don't get challenged. So Sparta was very stable, very, very, I would call it stagnant, but very stable in the sense of life didn't change there. People were in the system and it was a self-sustaining system. So let's talk about what should we call that? What would be a good name for it? Now, there are a number of possible candidate terms. And it's, to some extent, there's a little bit of optionality in terms of which one is going to be absolutely the best. Because we've already seen, on the superficially, we might want to call it a duarchy. It's got two kings. Again, we might be tempted to say, well, it's an aristocracy because of the ephors and the separation of powers and the fact that the Spartans have absolute power over the slaves and the commoners. That's aristocratic. And then on the other hand, we have a constitution. So there's a set of laws to which all government officials must swear allegiance. So there's a temptation there to say, well, it's some kind of constitutional government. But the problem with that is that a constitution, if we're going to be referring to either a constitutional monarchy or perhaps a republic, right, we have to reserve those terms, our are, we use those terms in reference to governments where the power of the government over the individual is limited. Where the point of the Constitution is to limit the power of the government over the individual. But in Sparta, there's no such premise. The point of the laws of Sparta, and thus the essence of Spartan government, is total service to the state. The essence of Spartan life is service to the government at all levels, every individual. Nobody in Sparta has a right to life. Nobody in Sparta can say, I want to choose to do something differently. I don't want to go to war. I'm going to work on my business, right? Or I'm going to become an artisan because I really feel like I have an artistic personality and I want to make nice furniture. No. There's no such thing. So every individual from the slaves all the way up to the king, including every member of the aristocracy, right, is completely under the control of the government. All the property is held in common. There is no such thing as private property. There are no private purposes or private goals or private life in Sparta. So what kind of government do we call that? Where everything is in common. Where everybody lives in service of the government. Everything revolves around the government. And the most privileged people are the ones that have power in government. But even they don't get to pursue their happiness. What they do is they serve the government. So what do we call that? A society that revolves around its government. The government is the coordinating agency of everything in life. We could give that different terms. Theo, what would be one you would give?
Well, what pops to mind is communism.
Mm-hmm, indeed. Because in modern times, we have this term, communism, and that is the that is my choice for the best term to refer to this. Now, it's a little bit hard to use the term communism outside of the context of modern times, because most people have the expectation that when you're talking about communism, you're talking about something like Russia, or today, the only ones that are really left over are North Korea and Cuba. And so there's not much left to look at in terms of communism, not much left to look at in terms of societies where everybody lives in service of the state. I would say North Korea is the best example left of that. And you can see how dreary that world is. And you can see the military news and so on. It's always focused on that sort of thing. And it's interesting because the North Koreans very much live according to that premise that life is war, and that they're constantly, all they ever talk about is preparing to nuke the U.S. and to conquer South Korea. And that's all they ever talk about. That's all they're ever doing. You know, having military parades, and the leader of North Korea is always being, his pictures are always taken with his generals on every side. And they're always talking about atomic weapons or the power of the North Korean military and its submarines and whatever, right? That's always what it's always what it is. That's definitely where we would see it today. About 20 years ago, a little bit more than 20 years ago, well, like 30 really, Russia was still communist. And that was the most infamous example because it was a very prominent country. Very kind of scary country because it has a big nuclear arsenal, and it was aligned in the Cold War against the United States. But that's very much how Russia was, that the state, the government, controlled everything. And there was no private property. And the people who had the most amount of power in the society were the Communist Party members. And they got to be in charge, like the aristocracy in Sparta. They were in charge, but You know, basically, what was their life like? Did they have some kind of happy life? I mean, no, basically, they spent their whole time trying to solve the problems of how to manage that society, how to keep its military strong and threaten the United States and so on. So it was a very dreary life for them as well, very much like the Spartan aristocracy. The only difference is they had what we call an ideology. A lot of people think when they think of communism, they think of it having an ideology, and it was called Marxism or Leninism, and there's just little minor variations between those. In modern times, that's kind of what people, when they think of communism, they think of an ideological society that follows those ideas. But the basic concept, communism, means that there's no private property, and everything is controlled by the government. That's communism. That's what Sparta had. And so it's not a modern ideological communism, but it's an archaic communism. It's an archaic and militaristic communism, and that's what it is. So the essence of it, it's right there. I mean, what other terms might we apply to this kind of society? Well, one term that does come to mind is totalitarian, in the sense that totalitarian means the government has total control. And so that is another term. Communism is a form of totalitarianism, but there are other kinds as well. So some of them could be religious, some of them, and there are other forms like Nazism and so on. So totalitarianism is kind of a blanket term for all those different kinds. And in this particular case, I think of communism as being the best specific term to refer to what Sparta is. All right, so there is there's Sparta for you. Now, what kind of history would a city-state like that have? Right? I mean, it's pretty obvious. We're not going to see cultural developments. We're not going to see any kind of flowering of new ideas here. We're going to see war, right? Because that's what life is to these people. And so that is exactly what we have in terms of any documented events in Spartan history. They pertain to wars. And they pertain in particular to the expansion of what was called the Peloponnesian League. That's a tough one to spell. Peloponnesian with double N. All right, I put that in the chat for everybody there. The Peloponnesian League was the alliance that Sparta built over the period of its archaic history. So, you know, from 776 to 500 BC, this is what Sparta was doing. It was living according to its values, according to the belief that life is war. And so the first event that we have of any reasonable significance and accuracy in Spartan history, it's called the First Messenian War. There's Messene, another one of the city-states in archaic Greece. In the First Messenian War, Sparta defeated Messene and enslaved its population. And then in the Second Messenian War, they rebelled with the help of some of the other city-states in the area, but Sparta was successful in putting down that rebellion. And gradually over time, Sparta went either took control of or allied itself to the aristocracy of the other city-states. So remember what happened when when Athens' aristocracy was ejected by Pisistratus. They got the Spartans to help. Well, it was a similar case with regard to other city-states in Greece as well. Elis, right here. Corinth. were examples of other city-states that had a tyrannos, and then the Spartans came and helped the aristocracy to reconquer the city. So the Spartans either conquered cities or forged alliances with their aristocracy until basically the entire Peloponnese became a league allied with Sparta. So this here, this whole area, right, is the Peloponnese. This little narrow passage called the Isthmus of Corinth is the only thing linking it to the Greek mainland. All of this essentially belonged to Sparta. And so circa 500 BC, when the Persians start showing up, Athens and these other characters over here are independent city-states, but Sparta has got this Peloponnesian League, and anybody that's going to fight off the Greeks is going to have to get Sparta's help. Is going to fight off the Persians, is going to have to get Sparta's help. Okay, so that's it for Sparta. There's nothing else to say about them. They had a peculiar form of government. They had this culture of war, or we might say militaristic culture. And it was part of their success. It was also part of the dreariness of their lives. But as we'll see in the Greco-Persian Wars, their dedication to that premise turned out to have some pretty world-altering consequences. So it's a very strange story, the way that life, even in modern times, it has some connection to ancient Sparta. Okay. That's all I've got. So with regard to Sparta, we're going to stop there. That's what's covered in your class notes all the way to here. Pardon me while I bring that up. Right? So grab all this content and look for the test preparation sheets later today. If you haven't finished your Rise of Athenian Democracy homework project, please do that first. But other than that, this is what you need. These are the resources for the test prep. So tomorrow, like I said, we're going to go back to Athens. And you've got 3 days to do the test prep, so that should be more than enough. And on Thursday, we do the test preparation class. Last thoughts for today? Questions? All right, good. I'm going to go finish that test prep sheet for you and post it to the class webpage as soon as I can, okay? So keep a lookout for that. All right, good luck, everybody. We'll end early today. That's going to do it. Talk to you tomorrow.
Bye, Mr. Powell.
Bye-bye.
Bye.